coming round for the children. Put your hand up and wave, kids, if you want one. And don't forget that if you fill in your worksheet, there's a prize for you afterwards, okay? And there are also Bibles coming round because we're going to be looking at that passage in Acts 9. We're taking a break from our sermon series in Acts 1 to 5. Because it's an all-age service, we're going to look at something else, and it's Ananias that we're going to look at. And as we've heard, we're going to think about courage and how to be courageous. We've already thought about some ways we can be courageous, but we're going to look at Ananias and his life and see how he got courage to do what he did. All the worksheets handed out, fantastic. Thank you, stewards. Do wave if you want a Bible as well. Now, courage. Boys and girls, who can tell me what courage is? I'm looking for a definition. Anyone put their hand up and tell me what you think courage is? Yeah, because that's what we're going to be talking about in the sermon. Courage, being courageous. Anyone want to have a go at what you think courage is? Gregory?
I think it's being brave when there are lots of things which most people would be scared.
Really good definition, thank you. It's being brave, Gregory said, when there are lots of things that people would be scared of. So it's when you go ahead and you do something, even if it frightens you. So lots of people have a fear of flying, don't they, as Johnny mentioned earlier. But it's going ahead, and even if you have that fear, stepping onto the plane. That's courage. Apparently it's worse when you take off, isn't it, and then you kind of settle down. But it's doing something even though it might scare you. Now I want to turn to the person, you to turn to the person next to you and just have a quick chat. What is the most courageous thing you've ever done? All right, just talk amongst yourselves. Share that for a couple of minutes. Good discussion. I'd like to see what you said. Does anyone want to volunteer and tell us what the most courageous thing you've ever done was? Anyone want to mention what you talked about? Your turn. Go on then. Here you go, Eric. Have the microphone so we can all hear you.
Last year, I saved two people in the down at the sailing club. They were fell out of the boats and we pulled them out.
Wow. Yeah. So you went out and rescued them?
Yeah.
Wow. I think that deserves a round of applause, doesn't it, everyone? Thank you. Thanks, Eric. I've been to that sailing club. It's lovely. It is quite scary far out, isn't it? Right in the middle of the lake. Anyone else want to share what they did that was courageous? Or was that a half hand there? No? Okay. Well, there you go. And there was one down here as well, wasn't there?
I expect most of you have seen the Tour de France on the television. If you haven't, get a chance to watch it. But the thing that the people shout to the riders as they're riding up the mountains is courage.
Oh.
So they have to have courage. And I know what it feels like because I rode up a mountain or two in the Alps. And it does take, you know, that will to keep going when it's really difficult.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, they are long mountains, a long, grueling ride to the top. Was there someone here?
I remember when I was 18, I was doing an outward bound course, and part of that was potholing. And in that, you went down a ravine, and then when you got to the bottom, the instructor said, well, you have to go through there. And what there was just a puddle in the ground. He said, you put your head under the water, and in about five feet, you'll come up on the other side, and you'll be able to breathe on the other side. And so everybody who had gone before me had done that, and so I felt that was a point to have courage to accept that what he was saying was right, and I did that. And fortunately, as I was going through, I was very worried, but when I got to the air on the other side, I was very pleased. And very pleased indeed.
Definitely, thank you, Sandy. Well, I think that should be a phobia, shouldn't it? Poor owling, it sounds awful. I have done it, but not like that. Just scouts crawling through tunnels, and that was scary enough. So we've all done things that require courage, haven't we? So we're all very familiar with fear and facing things that are difficult. So, if I can get the slide to move on. Ananias faced a difficult thing, a fearful thing. He needed courage. Jesus said to him, I want you to go and talk to Saul. And his heart must have missed a beat or two because he would have been scared of Saul. And we're going to just quickly look at why he would have been scared of Saul and why he needed courage. Okay? Why he would have been afraid in that situation where God said to him, speak to Saul. First of all, sorry if you can't see it at the back, it's a bit small. Verse 1 of Acts 9 says that Saul was breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples, against Christians. And Ananias was a Christian, and he had to approach Saul. He said, I'm going to murder them. Wow. Verse 2 says, he went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogue in Damascus, so that if he found any there who belonged to the way, that's again Christians, whether men or women, he might take them as prisoners. So he had to go to the very man who was going to take the Christians prisoner just for being Christians. Verse 13 and 14, he says, he voices his fears. He says, Lord, I've heard many reports about this man, the harm he's done to your saints, and he's come here with authority from the chief priests to arrest Christians. So he'd heard, Saul's reputation had gone before him. Verse 21, all those who heard him were astonished and asked, isn't he the man, this is after Saul had become a Christian, but he had this reputation as the man who raised havoc in Jerusalem amongst those who call on his name, amongst Christians. So he was infamous for raising havoc, for really, really scaring people. And then lastly, verse 26, the disciples were still afraid of him. They didn't believe he really was a disciple. They probably thought he was a spy. He was still out to harm them. Such was his reputation. Such was the scary things that he had done in the past. So Ananias had good reason to be afraid, right? I think all of us would have been afraid if God had told us to speak to a man like Saul. But he went ahead and did it. And to do it, he needed courage. But the question is, we might need courage, and what will give us courage? Well, what sort of things might God ask us to do which require us to be courageous? Because that was the special job that God had for Ananias, speak to Saul. But what sort of things might God say to us that require us to take courage? Again, let's talk to one another and discuss this question together for a couple of moments. Christian life is an adventure, and like all adventures, there are perils, there are difficulties, and things that require courage. So here are some of the things that God might, he doesn't all, not all these things, but God might require us to do. So first of all, Johnny mentioned this, he might require us to speak in public. And I don't need to say much about that, because as Johnny said, that was something God evidently called him to do, and gave him courage, because Johnny's a very good public speaker, and as he said, it's not him, it's God helping him. And as he does it more and more, God gives him more courage. How about if someone we know, someone in church, someone outside of church, is terminally ill and we have to speak to them? We can feel afraid, can't we? We can think, what if I say something wrong? What if I make things worse? How am I going to approach this very delicate situation? What if I just burst into tears? And fear can fill us. We need courage in that situation. I found this hard when I was at school, boys and girls, telling people that I go to church. I needed a lot of courage. I was very scared of how they might react, what they might say, if they might laugh at me. Me and Gregory were having a conversation. Sometimes it needs courage to tell people about Jesus, doesn't it? They might get angry. They might call us weirdos, or they might insult us, or something like that. But as Jody insightfully mentioned, often it's the anticipation is more scary than the action, isn't it? But nevertheless, it can be a scary thing to do. sometimes we might find ourselves in a situation where a friend who's a Christian is doing something they shouldn't. And it's not just a one-off. They keep on doing it, and we know we have to tell them. And we have to rebuke them. That means to lovingly tell them, look, this is wrong. And that's difficult, isn't it? And that takes a lot of courage. And we need a lot of help from God when we're rebuking and disciplining one another. We need a lot of love as well. How about if we start a new ministry? Maybe we feel God is calling us to start something new in the church or outside of the church, to go somewhere, to do something. And it's all new and different and might require us to make sacrifices and so on. There might be a cost involved. Might be calling us to change a job or go abroad or something like that. That requires courage. How about repenting? That's how we start the Christian life, but it's how we continue the Christian life, not because we need to keep on getting back our salvation. Once we've repented at the beginning, we've got it. But as we sin, we need to turn back to God. And sometimes, it's weird, sometimes we can get so used to sin and a mindset of sinning that we find we don't want to stop sinning because we're worried about how we'll cope. We love our sin so much. Our sin has become life to us, and turning to Jesus for life makes us feel nervous about what that might feel like and whether we might be happy and whether we might be fulfilled and whether we'll cope. What about if we're called to speak out against injustice, something that's wrong, maybe at work, maybe in public, maybe amongst friends, something, some issue, we feel that's wrong. And we know that people won't take kindly to what we're saying. God often calls us to do things like he called Ananias, which require courage. So the big question is, how do we get courage? So I meant to say this. All through the Bible, we're told we need courage, such as this verse, 1 Corinthians 16:13. Be on your guard, stand firm in the faith, be courageous, be strong. So how do we get courage? Well, what gave Ananias courage? Let's think about that now. First of all, he believed that Jesus would be with him. Okay, I'm sure that because he was an early disciple, he had heard from the disciples or someone who'd spoken to the disciples what Jesus said to them just at the end, just before he was going to go back to heaven. Remember what he said in Matthew 28:19? Therefore go, he said to Ananias, go. He says to Christians, go, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you, and surely I am with you always to the very end of the age. And he'd probably heard about this, and highly likely he'd experienced it. He'd seen what happened at Pentecost and how Jesus kept his promise, and the Holy Spirit was with the disciples. And that would have given him courage. My Jesus is with me. And it's like Jesus anticipates that we need courage, isn't it? Surely, I am with you. To the very end of the age, I'll always be with you, he's saying. And he would have taken courage from that fact, that God was with him. When I was having a conversation with Gregory about the things that we'd done that require courage, he said that he was in Turkey once on holiday and he had to go for a swim, and he went out to sea. It was a long way and he felt quite scared. But, you said, it was okay. I had courage because my dad was with me. And we feel that, don't we? If someone is with us, we take courage. I wonder whether anyone has done this. Has anyone done skydiving? Hands up. No. I would love to do skydiving. I'm not brave enough. But if I ever did it, I would do it like, can you see, just about see, there's two people? And that's how I would do it. Because you're with someone. It'd be horrendous to jump out of the plane on your own, wouldn't it? But if you're with an instructor, someone who's got experience, someone who's done it before, someone who's got two parachutes strapped to them, someone who you're strapped to with lots of straps, then I think maybe I could do skydiving. Because everything changes when someone's with you, doesn't it? We're going to watch a video clip now. And if the stewards could do the curtains. We're going to watch a video clip about a fish who got stuck in the mouth of a whale. Okay? It's Finding Nemo. And he was very scared. But we're going to see how he became courageous and managed to get out of the mouth of the whale. He's a tiny fish. You know how big whales are. Now, what is it like inside the mouth of a whale? It's dark, isn't it? So I apologize. This video clip is very dark. So you're going to have to use your imagination. What's it like inside the mouth of a whale? And we can hear the voices, but can't see very much that's going on. But hopefully as we close the curtains, it'll be okay. So watch carefully, boys and girls, because we're going to discuss this afterwards and think about what gave the fish, who was Nemo's dad, courage. So, hopefully you managed to see that, although it was dark. I love that clip, because there's Nemo's dad, and he's very scared, but he got courage, didn't he? And who helped him? What helped him? It was his friend, Dory, because she was with him, and she could speak whale, and she knew what to do. And okay, he didn't believe her at first, but because she was with him, he did it, didn't he? And what did he do? He let go. He had to let go of the whale's tongue and drop in, and then they were spurted out, and it was all okay, and they escaped. But do you know what? That video clip teaches us something. We need to remember, when we're faced with a difficult situation, that Jesus is with us by his Holy Spirit. God is in us. God is living inside us. And when we face things that are different, he will help us. Like Nemo's dad said, it might not always go right. It's not that nothing bad will ever happen to us, but he'll be with us through the difficulties. It probably was very scary falling down and getting spurted out for those fish, wasn't it? But God is with us, and sometimes we need to let go. That's what courage involves. And say, okay, God, I'm going to let you help me. I'm scared about this, but I'm going to do this thing that you're asking me to do, and I'll let go and I'll fall back and trust that you'll be with me. So that's a really interesting clip to watch about courage. God is with us. We see it all through the Bible, such as 2 Chronicles 32:7. Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid or discouraged because of the king of Assyria. God's people were surrounded by this massive army who were way more powerful than them. Don't be afraid of the vast army, for there was a greater power with us than with him. Isn't that great? And we can say that. What army are you facing? Not a literal army, but what huge thing in your life are you facing? What situation scares you and makes you think, I can't deal with this? Whatever it is, there is a greater power with us than with that's involved in that situation. And that power is God, and God is for us and with us and will take us and walk us through whatever we have to face. And this from Joshua 1:9, which we saw earlier. Be strong and courageous. He commands us to be strong and courageous. Don't be afraid. Don't be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. And that's great too, isn't it? We all have different journeys to go through life. And they all take us through different things where we struggle. And he'll be with us through them. So, that's the first thing. God was with him. The second thing that gave Ananias courage was this. He believed that God had big plans for Saul. How do we know that? Because God told him that he had big plans. Verse 15. But the Lord said to Ananias, go, this man is my chosen instrument to proclaim my name to the Gentiles. Gentiles, boys and girls, are people who are not Jews. And their kings and to the people of Israel. Big plans, huh? God had chosen Saul to tell people about Jesus, to tell Gentiles, their kings, and Jewish people as well. And I think that would have given Ananias courage. I can't do this. But wait, I have to do this because God's got such big plans for Saul. And that would have impelled him to go and talk to him, this murderous man who was breathing out threats. And I think sometimes when we're thinking, I must tell that person about Jesus, or I must do this thing that requires courage, if we keep in our mind, God might have big plans for that person, might have really big plans, that will give us courage. I want to give you three examples, two from my life and one from the Bible, where big plans gave courage. First of all, I have a friend called Ben, and he is a pastor in Wiltshire. And he's a good pastor, and his church has grown, and people have become Christians, and he's looked after people, he's looked after me. He's a great guy. Obviously, he wasn't always a Christian. In fact, he grew up a Jew. Interesting. One day he was in town. He'd been doing some work in the garden, and he had his old jacket on that he used. He didn't mind getting dirty. And somebody gave him a tract, a little leaflet, that talked about Jesus. And he took it and put it in the pocket of his coat. Then he went back home, finished off what he was doing in the garden, forgot about the tract, and hung up the coat in the shed. A year later, I don't think he was much of a gardener, but a year later, he put the coat on again because he needed to do some more garden work, and thought, what is this in my pocket? And it was the tract. And he read it. And long story short, he became a Christian. And I met him at Bible college training, and he's a pastor now. And I thank as well that person who gave him that tract. Because it's often a bit nerve-wracking, and needs courage to give out leaflets in town. And I think they probably thought, this is not just a piece of paper. This has the words of eternal life on it. If I give this to this man, it might change his life. And it did. It gave them courage to hand that leaflet out. So think big. Think, I'm going to talk to this person, but God might have big plans for them. God might be using them to affect many other people as well. Another example. My aunt goes to a church in Leeds, and they used to have a pastor called Peter Parkinson. Anyway, one morning, Peter Parkinson was preaching, and he was preaching about we must be Christians who do things, not just talk about doing good, actually get out there and do good and help the vulnerable and look and protect the people that society forgets about. And he gave a good sermon like that. Anyway, a lady in his congregation came up to him afterwards, a short lady, and tapped him on the chest and said, that was a good sermon, but what are you going to do, Pastor? And he was really challenged by that, because he thought, yeah, I've just preached a sermon, but what am I going to do about the vulnerable people in society? And do you know what he did? He set up something called Caring for Life, which is an organization in Leeds that care for vulnerable people for the whole of their lives. It's a huge commitment. And so loads of vulnerable people who have been harmed and rejected by society can go there. They have a farm now, and they're self-sufficient, and they have purpose and so on. But that started with that woman courageously challenging her pastor and asking him what he was going to do. Because she thought, God's got something for you to do, Pastor. You've just preached that sermon. You need to act on it now. Think big. Big plans. And that was big because so many people's lives were affected. Lastly, an example from the Bible. Esther. You know the story of Esther. Chapter 4, verse 12 says this. Just give you the background in case you don't know the story. Esther is queen. She's Jewish. Her uncle Mordecai discovers a plot to kill the Jews. As queen, she has access to the king, so she can potentially stop all the Jews getting killed. Esther chapter 4, verse 12 says this, when Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back this answer, do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. He's saying to her, take courage, Esther, because who knows? God might have had big plans for you. Why were you chosen to be queen? Who knows? Maybe it's for this time. Maybe you can save the Jews by talking to the king. And she did. She had courage. She talked to the king, even at risk of her life. And well, I won't tell you the end of the story because you can read it for you. Esther's a very short book and a wonderful book as well. But Mordecai thought big. Perhaps God has big plans for Esther. And Esther took that on board and it gave her courage. Let's move on. Oh no, I just wanted to show you this diagram. We are all part of a community, aren't we? I'm not talking about this community here, but we know people. And our lives affect people. And I want you, next time you're thinking about telling someone about Jesus, or not even doing something big, just being kind to people, showing people grace. I want you to think big about what effect your words and your kind actions can have on people. So let's think about this. Here's loads of people. They're all different, okay? Here's you, okay? Now, you courageously talk to this guy, all right? Let's say you tell him about Jesus at work, for example, all right? And it's difficult, but you're thinking big. You think God might have good, big plans for this guy, so you go ahead and do it. But guess what happens? A few years down the line, this guy becomes a Christian. And then what does he do? He talks to this guy. And time passes, and this guy becomes a Christian. And then this guy talks to this lady and this man. And they become Christians. Years go on. The decades mount up. And then they talk to these people. She talks to these two women. And he talks to this man and this man as well. And can you see, from this one beginning, this one act of courage has affected all of these people. And that is the effect we can have. We might think, oh, I can't do much. But doesn't happen. Sometimes it's just you know how it is, don't you? Perhaps you've been in a situation in your life when you've been really low, but someone has showed you some kindness, and it's just given you that lift you need to carry on. And even those small acts of kindness that take courage, those, I don't know what to say, but I'll go ahead and try and encourage that person anyway, they can have massive ripple effects and affect loads of people. And boys and girls, look at this. Your effects can have, you might think, I'm just a boy, I'm just a girl. Here's you living in Britain. You might talk to someone in your class who's from a different country. They might go back to France, let's say, or Africa or something, and talk to someone. And then they might travel here and here. And our words can effectively go across the globe through people. So let's think big. Let's think this person, God might have big plans for them. And that will give us courage, just as it did Ananias. Okay, finally, what gave Ananias courage? Well, he believed it was important to obey God. And we see that in Acts chapter 22, verse 12, which says this. A man named Ananias came to see me. This is Paul recounting what happened. He was a devout observer of the law. That means he carefully obeyed God and highly respected by all the Jews living there. So Ananias was a Christian, and he thought it was very important to obey God. That was his top priority. Obedience was key with him. And I think that's why he went ahead and took courage and did what God said, even though it's difficult. Because he was like, I have to obey. It's a command from God. Obedience is important. So boys and girls, we must obey. Adults, we must obey. When Jesus tells us to do something, we got to do it. We just have to do it. We can't say, oh, no. It's not all about keeping the law. I'm a Christian. I've been saved. No, it doesn't matter if I obey or not. Sometimes we can get a little bit mixed up about obedience as Christians. And we can wonder whether we should or shouldn't, and we can get mixed up about why we should obey. So I just want to take a very short digression to talk about obedience. Okay? When you're a Christian, the reason we obey is not to sort of like get God to accept us, not to earn his favor, because we've already been accepted because of Jesus. The reason we obey when we're Christians is because we've already been accepted and we love God, and it's a response of gratitude. So two statements I want to show you on the screen that have really helped me, sort of stopped me getting mixed up about obedience. First of all, our obedience doesn't save us, but we are saved to obey. Our obedience doesn't save us. Even if we obey and obey and obey, that won't get us into heaven. Because we can't obey perfectly. We always end up disobeying. And God has to punish for our disobedience. So it's not our obedience that gets us to heaven. It's Jesus. It's our repentant faith in Jesus. But once we're saved, God wants us to obey. That's his plan for us. It's very clear in the Bible. He wants us to do good, not to earn his favor, but because it blesses us, because it blesses other people, because it brings him glory, because he wants us to flourish, and he wants other people and society to flourish. Obedience is good. But that statement helps me keep it the right way around. in my mind. Okay. Working. A second statement. I think this is from Tim Keller, but I can't remember. But it helps me as well. The top one, this is what a Christian says, how a Christian is motivated. I'm accepted, therefore I obey. I'm accepted by God because of Jesus. Wow, isn't that great? Therefore I obey him out of love. But a Christian does not say, I obey, therefore God accepts me, because I'm such a good person and I always obey. That's not how it works. The Bible is very clear about that. So the key, and boys and girls, listen, because this is one of the questions on your sheet. The key that unlocks our hearts so that they obey is being amazed and thankful and filled with gratitude at what God has done to us. Okay? You get that, boys and girls? When we're amazed that God has allowed Jesus to die for us, and we're full of gratitude and we're full of thankfulness, that's the key that unlocks our hearts and causes us to want to obey out of sheer love and gratitude. Wanted to say that because I've got very confused in my Christian life and mixed up many a time about what place obedience has in the life of a Christian, but these two statements have helped me. Let's finish off then. Acts chapter 9 is actually about Saul, isn't it, becoming a Christian. We focused on Ananias because he was very courageous. But I wonder whether you've ever thought, was Saul Paul? Who was he? Well, he was both. A lot of people had two names, okay? Now, the name Saul, that was his Hebrew name. And as you can see, it means the requested one or the asked for one. But Paul was his Roman name. And what's your question, Lumi?
It means little.
That's right. Paul means little or small. It's the meaning of that name. Now, when Saul became a Christian, he started to use the name Paul. And I think there were two reasons for that, as it says on the screen. Number one, he was reaching the Gentiles. It just made it easier if he had a Roman name, easier for them to accept him. But I wonder whether he preferred his Roman name because of what it meant. Because it reminded him that he had to become little and humble to become a Christian. Because what I was talking about obedience, he was trying to earn God's favor by obeying. He says, I kept the law. I tried really hard to keep the law. But all of a sudden he realized that's not going to get me into heaven. He had to become humble and say, actually, there's still sin in my life. I have to forget about what I've done and focus on what Jesus has done and come to him with repentant faith. And that would have always kept him humble, that reminder. And I wonder whether that's why he used the name Paul from there on in. Because we don't see him calling himself Saul. And if you're not a Christian, that is where Christianity starts. Humility, saying, I can't do it. I can't obey enough. It's too hard. I just can't. I have to forget about my obedience and believe that Jesus died on the cross. And he was punished for my disobedience. And trust in him. And that's how we're saved. And then go on to live a life of obedience. Well, God bless you. Thank you for listening. Well done, boys and girls. Don't forget to hand your sheets in to Johnny or Naomi afterwards. And there'll be some prizes for you. You listened really well. Thank you very much. And I'll hand back to you guys.